Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Contextualizing National Security, where we try to understand current events in the national security world to better understand the international system that we live in. I'm your host, Haley Fawcett, and today we're going to be talking about critical mineral supply chains, their threat to U.S. security, and how the U.S. can address these vulnerabilities. Let's get started. Critical minerals play a pivotal role in the technological revolution that we are living through. This broad list of minerals that naturally occur all over the world are essential components of modern technologies in defense, renewable energy, healthcare, and consumer goods. The short and long-term national security of the United States is threatened by the significant disadvantages it faces related to the production of critical minerals and acute vulnerabilities related to the access of these essential resources. The primary threat to U.S. critical mineral security is its dependence on China, who has established significant power over global critical mineral supply chains. Beijing controls 90% of the world's critical minerals processing, which is the ultimate choke point in the sector, is home to the world's largest rare earth elements reserves, and has a virtual monopoly over global minerals reserves, which it has acquired by buying majority ownership in mining projects around the world and directing these countries' exports towards the Chinese processing industry. Most importantly, China weaponizes its leverage over global critical mineral supply chains, having demonstrated the willingness and ability to shut off access to essential resources against the U.S. during trade wars or against other states as a coercive measure to achieve policy goals. Since entering office, the second Trump administration has paid significant attention to these strategic disadvantages and vulnerabilities through domestic and foreign policy initiatives. On the foreign policy side, these initiatives are primarily driven by the Forum on Resource and Geostrategic Engagement, or FORGE, which is a coalition of U.S. partners focused on creating hospitable markets for investment in critical mineral supply chains with the goal of countering Chinese dominance over the sector. Today, we are going to examine different policy frameworks that the U.S. could take in its approach to building critical minerals supply chain security moving forward. Option one is emulating the Chinese model. China's power over global critical mineral supply chains is a result of its power over processing. Essentially, even when other countries may have rich resources of critical minerals and the necessary mining infrastructure to extract them, China controls 90% of the world's processing infrastructure, and therefore these countries must rely on China to refine the raw minerals into products ready to be used in the manufacturing processes and finishing goods they are essential components of. China has built this critical minerals processing industry through over a decade of intentional investments alongside strategic international financing to gain control of mineral exports, leaving resource-rich countries. The U.S. could attempt to emulate this model through heavy investment in domestic processing infrastructure, which is largely absent in the U.S., coordinated investments in domestic mining industries to strengthen a domestic flow of raw materials, and an aggressive foreign investment framework to obtain majority ownership in mining industries abroad, which would enable the U.S. to funnel critical mineral exports towards its domestic processing industry. There's been a lot of momentum towards this strategy in recent policy initiatives, including the Unleashing American Energy Executive Order, which cut down lengthy permitting processes and waiting times for mining infrastructure proposals. A Department of Energy Notice of Funding Opportunity announcement opening contract proposals for mining and processing infrastructure developments, and also the purchase of one of the largest cobalt mines in the world located in the Democratic Republic of Congo, to name a few. However, this policy option faces an important challenge that has implications for U.S. strategic goals. Specifically, bringing mining and processing infrastructure online can take up to a decade, if not longer, and therefore this policy framework would not solve the U.S.'s short-term vulnerabilities to dependencies on Chinese mineral exports. A second policy option involves U.S. engagement in friendshoring, which involves the investment of the expansion of critical minerals mining and processing capacities in allied and partner countries. A friendshoring approach addresses important shortcomings in U.S. critical minerals capacities. These include import reliance and the inability of the U.S. to fully meet all of its current and future demands for critical minerals with domestic production alone. First, the physical reality of critical minerals is that while they are found all over the world, they only exist in certain deposits where they are concentrated enough to be extracted and used for production. While the U.S. does have important reserves of some minerals such as copper or gold, it does not have territorial ownership over all of, or enough of, the critical minerals needed to be fully independent from global critical mineral supply chains. Second, investing in the expansion of existing mining and processing capacities in partner states could help overcome some of the long-term timing constraints that put the U.S. at a disadvantage when trying to establish domestic critical minerals industries. Friendshoring to the Latin American region specifically could be important for U.S. critical mineral supply chain security and larger security goals in the region. Latin America is a pivotal region for critical mineral supply chains. First, its countries are abundant in natural resources and are some of the world's top producers in critical minerals. For example, the lithium triangle of Chile, Argentina, and Bolivia is home to 70% of the world's known lithium reserves. Additionally, China has pursued strategic investment in Latin American critical minerals and industries. It is imperative that the U.S. counterbalance the encroachment of Chinese influence over our backyard neighbors. A friendshoring approach to Latin America would require the U.S. to act urgently to build on recently signed bilateral critical minerals framework agreements from Latin American states like Mexico, Chile, Argentina, Peru, Paraguay, and Ecuador. Taking these agreements from the exploratory and planning stages to the concrete commitment of investment, mobilized private sector funding, and the physical construction of the necessary infrastructure will be important for strengthening regional critical mineral supply chains. Working through the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement will also be important for mobilizing the necessary funding in public and private sources. It is important that a U.S. investment strategy aimed at Latin American partners goes beyond extracted capacities and recognizes the mutual strategic goals of our peers. For example, recent U.S. attempts at signing a bilateral framework agreement with Brazil have been unsuccessful because the middle power Brazil wants to also strengthen its critical mineral security. It wants to do this by maintaining agency over its abundant natural resources. A friendshoring framework will only be successful if it treats regional partners as friends and invests in not only infrastructure, but trustworthy long-term partnerships. Friendshoring in Latin America also faces the challenge of the potential destabilizing effects of the mining industry at the local level. Mining can create instability within Latin American countries via the pushback from local indigenous communities who are harmed by the environmental, economic, and social impacts of mining, and the inequitable distribution of the industry's socioeconomic benefits, which exacerbates existing socioeconomic rifts and tensions in the region. To overcome this challenge, a U.S. investment strategy aimed at achieving successful friendshoring must pursue a responsible framework centered around local collaboration, creating local jobs and training local workforces, and protecting local environments. A third policy option approaches critical mineral security from the demand side. It seeks to address the root of Western firms' struggles to enter the critical mineral supply chain markets, which is the ability of Chinese firms to manipulate markets and prices. Essentially, decades of Chinese investment in state-owned mining companies have made these companies immune to profit raids. This enables them to engage in dumping, which involves ramping up production to flood the market with mineral supply and pushing prices below the cost of production. These market manipulation tools drive Western firms out of the market and creates an inhospitable investing environment. The logic of the demand-side policy is as follows. Firms investing in mining and processing industries need a reliable source of demand that they can be sure will pay for their products once the investments are made and the mines are online. Investing in American manufacturing on the demand side of critical minerals would help absorb excess supplies, create this reliable demand, and stabilize the market for domestic and friendly firms to enter. Ultimately, this would help the U.S. to increase its supply-side capacities in the long run. A demand-side critical minerals policy framework will require a focus on investment in domestic manufacturing capacities for industries with high demand for critical minerals, namely electric vehicles, renewable energy technologies and infrastructure, and lithium-ion batteries. It would also require a focus on creating markets for these goods through incentivizing domestic consumption, engaging in sustained diplomatic engagement to expand markets for U.S. goods in partner countries, and domestic compliance standards and incentive structures for friendly input sourcing. A demand-side framework has important secondary effects for the U.S. as well. This policy option would support the growth of domestic manufacturing, spur economic growth, and expand U.S. power over global energy markets by creating competitive industries at home. Renewable energy technologies would also expand the U.S. job market. This sector already posts job growth rates that outpace the national rate of job growth, and it creates even more jobs through the need for manufacturing and construction related to the expansion of power grids. After examining these policy options, it's important to recognize core risks and trade-offs related to U.S. critical mineral security. There are two key balancing acts involved in creating a policy framework for addressing these needs. First, there's a tension between greater domestic independence over critical minerals and engagement in cooperative efforts to diversify supply chains among friendly states. The geological and geographic reality of critical minerals makes these supply chains fundamentally interdependent, But to what extent does the U.S. risk future vulnerabilities and dependencies on external actors for the fate of the key technologies in defense, energy, healthcare, and consumer goods? Second, the U.S. must balance timing constraints associated with the critical mineral sector along short and long-term goals. The reality of the current state of U.S. mining and processing capacity is that most scholars project that it will take at least a decade to build a strong enough infrastructure to have greater reliance on our own domestic critical mineral supply chain. This reality clashes with the need to deal with short-term resilience against Chinese ability to weaponize its leverage over our critical minerals dependencies. However, it is also important that the U.S. begins to take decisive action towards its long-term resilience in countering Chinese dominance over global markets. I conclude this podcast by considering how we can work towards critical mineral security for the U.S. in the future. Policymakers across relevant executive branch departments should coordinate their efforts to build a strategic approach to critical mineral security that is focused on ensuring supply-side capacities in Latin America and building up domestic-side capacities inside the U.S. By pursuing these frameworks in tandem, the U.S. could create a regional critical mineral supply chain with mining, processing, and manufacturing capacity that would strengthen American and allied critical mineral security and counter growing Chinese influence in the region. American demand from expanded manufacturing capacity would create a more hospitable investing environment for the necessary expansion of supply-side capacities. The U.S. can circumvent its geological and infrastructural shortcomings by drawing on resource-rich Latin American partners with existing critical minerals infrastructures. This policy approach would also help bolster U.S. economic growth and global market competitiveness. It's important to recognize how this policy approach could risk continued U.S. vulnerabilities to dependence on external sources of critical minerals. However, the U.S. must balance core trade-offs by recognizing the inevitable interdependencies of critical mineral supply chains and the need for short-term resilience. By engaging in cooperative efforts with reliable partners, the U.S. can address the shortcomings of its domestic critical minerals infrastructure, move dependencies onto trustworthy allies, and build long-term partnerships for critical mineral security. Thank you for joining me today on the Contextualizing National Security podcast. As the U.S. moves forward into the unknown, I encourage you all to stay updated and informed about the state of the United States relationship with these essential resources that will shape our world's future.